It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding local nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. KMTS Connections connects you to everything that matters in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show. Jerry Rahal is the publisher of the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent, and driving force, would that be the correct term for this year's longevity project by the paper?
I wouldn't know if I'd call it a driving force, okay, but it's definitely a passion project of mine.
Okay. Again, this is the latest iteration, if you will, of something that the paper has done for a long time, a series on aging and different health issues. And when you became the publisher, what you decided to do with this is turn it into mental health awareness. And that's kind of culminates next Tuesday night in I don't know if I'd call it a keynote talk by a national expert.
Yeah. I mean, so as this year has gone along, you know, we had our editorial board meetings when we'd have people from the community come in and talk about issues in our community. And as we talked about things, mental health just kept coming up as an issue. And then you looked at the suicide rates in the county and mental health, and you looked at the homelessness and mental health. And so it just felt like mental health was a subject matter that had great relevance for this community, both on a microcosm level, but even on a national level to a degree. And so while typically these events have been more focused on how to age well, we just felt mental health was such a big deal that we wanted to do something that could touch on all ages. And so when we first started talking about this subject, I mean, how do you address mental health? Like, how do you do it? It's such a big deal. And so we focused in on a concept that would be looking at mental health in a, you know, by age demographics, from you know very young age to maybe teen, young adult, to middle age, to senior. But we really liked our keynote speaker is Frank King. He's the mental health comedian. he has been dubbed, that's what he's been dubbed at least. And, he used to work for The Tonight Show. I mean, he's open for national comics like Jerry Seinfeld. And, what I really liked, I watched a YouTube video of him and I just really liked about how he had a conversation about starting a conversation about mental health. Like, we often know people that we think are struggling with mental health issues and we may ask them like, how you doing? And they're always going to say the same thing. I'm all right. But I think it's a lot easier than you think. But it can be, you know, sometimes it just takes that effort to do it. So kind of the goal throughout the series was to talk about issues, but then to bring Frank King in and have him, you know, talk about in a, you know, a light-sided manner, but a very serious subject in mental health. So we're really excited. I mean, I don't think every day you have someone who's worked for The Tonight Show and been on a national tour with comedians to bring into the community.
At least publicly.
Not publicly, yeah.
They're here, but, you know, they're trying to get away from all that usually.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so we're excited to have him come in and capstone this series, but then the other side of it, too, is when the series is over, that doesn't mean the issue goes away. And so
I'm sure when you came here in your research, you learned about, the suicide rates locally. I mean, it's been something that's been of concern by public officials, and we've talked about it on the news over the last few years, and so this is kind of your answer to that, I guess you might say.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we look at these issues, I mean, I'm a big advocate for if you don't have a healthy mind, it's kind of hard to have healthy anything else. And so, on Tuesday we had a speaker in and she was chatting about like aging, you know, and taking care of the caretaker. Like she was talking to people about, you know, who are taking care of their parents. And one of the big messages for her is like, you can't take care of them if you can't take care of yourself. And that's true across all demographics.
It's one of the big arguments for respite care, is you have to have that time set aside to take care of yourself so that when you are there with whoever you're taking care of, usually it's your parents, I suppose, but not necessarily, you can be your best person.
Well, absolutely. But and one of the things I noted at that thing is it's regardless of your age in life, that happens. Like I have two young kids. I have a wife. I have a team of staff that I care about deeply. And one of the things I brought up, there's this book, The Miracle Morning, and I was reading it, and it talked about how you invest in yourself to take care of yourself. And I realized I spent almost zero time investing and taking care of myself. All my time was being spent on that. And I think that's true for a lot of people, that you have all these priorities in life that you're trying to address. And so can you take 10, 15, 20 minutes, an hour a day that you just focus on your mental health? And I don't mean mental health like I'm on Facebook, I'm taking some time to get away from things. I mean actively doing things to invest in yourself. And so that's part of it, I think, for a mental health side of it. And that's kind of – I mean, all these things come together. And one of the things that was really fascinating through this process is, what we're hoping to do as well is connect people. An undercurrent of a lot of mental health issue is isolationism, like young kids feeling – like my kids are young, and I'm already addressing bullying issues. Like you don't think a second and fourth grader would be – you hear about a lot at the older ages, but it's happening now. And then you have the teens who are – maybe they leave the home and they're on their own for the first time, and that's both exciting and scary. Or you're middle age and, you come to a new community, and I can relate to this, where you come to a new community, you don't know anyone, you feel isolated. Or when you get older, you start to lose sight and hearing, and people you know and love are dying, and you become isolated. So – one of the hopes out of this long term is how we as a community connect better to each other, both, whether it's in positive health or someone just helping them out.
In a day and age and a society where it's really easy for technology to isolate as well. I mean, yes, you are more connected, and yet the interpersonal connection is almost non-existent in this day and age with Facebook and social media and so on and so forth, and texting.
Well, how often do you go? And I saw this Saturday night. We were out to eat, and I looked over, and there was a table of these guys eating or before the food came out, and they're all on their phones. They're not talking to each other. They're literally – and I just wonder if they're texting each other, like just as a joke. you're absolutely right. Like Facebook does not replace – the one-on-one contact that you can have with people. Social media, as far as much as good is done, and one of the things that's come through this is the damage that social media actually does, that it's a connector, but it also creates a lot of problems.
And I think the quality of the interaction has changed as well.
Absolutely.
It's a lot easier for me to insult you if I, go hide in the other room in the corner and, text you something nasty, as it is face-to-face to, say something right here and now.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that, at the paper as a whole, as I started about a year ago that we had a conversation about, but just in general, is the concept of, communication, not confrontation. Mm. I mean, how do we connect with each other? Like, we can have a difference of opinions.
Yeah, respectful discord. I think that's something that media in general is struggling with right now. Well, how do you address it, and how do you address it in a way – mm-hmm. that still honors this longstanding history of the First Amendment in the United States?
Well, I think how do you honor? I mean, one of the confusions about the First Amendment is not freedom of speech. That doesn't mean you get to say whatever you want or freedom of consequence.
Right.
It's really a matter of you can protest against the government. Mm-hmm. I think a struggle, though, and this is something that I get emails about all the time, is how do you regulate your, the post-independent Facebook page?
Right.
And I just think that, so we had an editorial board. We had, this one person was very conservative. I'm more middle road. And then you had another person who was very liberal. And it was interesting as we talked about it, we're in a room and we're having these conversations, and sometimes they were uncomfortable. But I think everyone who was part of it really respected each other afterwards and felt like they could talk. Or if that had been a Facebook thing, mm-hmm. it would have been, you dumb liberal, you dumb, Republican. Like, that does no good. Like, if conversation, can't move things forward, and that's one of the things we're trying to work on right now. And that goes back into that bigger landscape, like, of mental health. Like, if you're going onto a Facebook page and saying negative things just to attack people, is that really about the conversation, or is that more about you? And really, what does it do? Like, at the end of the day, what does it do?
thank you for bringing me back on topic as well.
Okay.
By the way, again, the culmination of the longevity project happens Tuesday, September 17th at Morgridge Commons, so above the library in downtown Glenwood. And you're selling tickets for this, or
we're doing both. So we're selling some tickets, and they're $15, but we're going to be donating that money to local nonprofits. The other thing we're doing is we're going to be reaching out to the schools and inviting teachers and their students to attend for free. Really, it's less about any money that's made. Like, we want people there because we think this is a really important topic.
And maybe you'll have some money that you can actually donate to some nonprofits.
And donate to those nonprofits dealing with it. So if we make some money and can give it to those nonprofits, great. But if we can get someone in there to, you know, whether there's someone who has or struggling with mental health or people who have loved ones who have mental health. And honestly, I don't know of anyone who doesn't have one or the other.
And again, the keynote speaker is Frank King. And you said that he calls himself, or other people have called him, the mental health comedian. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure if you YouTubed him, you could probably find some examples of.
Absolutely. He's a TED Talk speaker.
Oh, okay.
So that's one of the things that I watched when we were deciding on who to bring out. I watched his video, and there was a couple things in that video that really caught my attention, that really spoke to me, that I thought he'd be a good one to come out.
What time does it start Tuesday night?
So we start – the doors open at 5. And we're going to have some, you know, heavy appetizers and drinks available. We have a panel session. We have three panelists coming in one being brought in by Renew, who's one of our presenting sponsors, Connect for Health Colorado, who's another sponsor, and then Mind Springs Health. And so they're going to be a panel. Those three will be up there for about 45 minutes talking about local issues on that side of it. And then Frank King starts at 7. So the panel starts at 6. Frank King starts at 7.
And again, kind of statewide, regional, and local, I guess, folks on the panel is kind of what I got from that.
Yep.
And then again, Frank King. How long is his does he plan to be up there? About an hour or so?
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the really cool things as part of this process is we did micro sessions each week for the last 4 weeks. And they were supposed to last a certain time frame, but you know, like Tuesday, like it was supposed to end at 7, but people kept asking so many great questions that we were just, we let it go for as long as people had questions.
Does Frank also take questions?
I hope so.
Okay. So the panel discussion may go a little bit long then, I'm hearing clearly, and then perhaps
I think the panel discussion will be, we want Frank King on by 7.
Okay.
Because we, you know.
It's in his contract, the writer.
Yeah. But I think, I always find that when it comes to mental health, that people always have great questions, and I think people are always willing to answer them.
Again, this happens next Tuesday night, Morgridge Commons, so above the new library in downtown Glenwood. Again, it starts around 5 o'clock. You called them heavy appetizers and drinks. I'm assuming that's heavy appetizers, but not heavy drinks.
That is correct.
So you're talking about like water, coffee,
lemonade,
kind of
coffee. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We'll take a quick break and come back and visit a little bit more with Jerry in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, talking with Jerry Rahal from the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent, the new publisher for the last year or so. Mm-hmm. Answer me a question. So in the newspaper business, I've always editor, publisher, I've never really understood what those things mean. If you were to compare, would you be like a corporate CEO essentially?
Yeah.
Or
I like the analogy, the football analogy or the school analogy. Like,
okay,
so the football, on a football team, you have an offensive coordinator, you have a defensive coordinator, and you have a head coach.
Okay,
so your editor is maybe the offensive coordinator, and your ad director is a defensive coordinator, the head coach. Head coach helps influence those spheres.
Gotcha,
but those people still call the plays.
Okay.
And so, but so, at the end of the day, still responsible for everything.
Right. So kind of like a general manager.
General manager, yep.
You set policy, and then you kind of let your people do their thing within the guidelines of whatever.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Principal, school teachers. Kind of.
I've wondered about that for so long.
That's really funny because when I was an editor and at the Craig Daily Press, I used to always tell the publisher, like, everyone thinks I run this place. you just go do your thing and I'll take care of it. And when I actually became a publisher, I told him I was taking a demotion.
Right. So Craig, you know Frank Hannell from KRAI.
I do, yep.
Yeah, or I guess he sold KRAI a few years ago. But yeah, Frank talked to him every now and then because he was on the Colorado Broadcasters Association board. And so once a year he would call and we would commiserate and solve all the problems of the world. And then,
Frank did a great job. I was really impressed with Frank while I was in Craig.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Yep. Good guy, great station. Anyway, we're not here to talk about radio or newspaper. We're here to talk about the Longevity Project, this year's mental health series by the Post-Independent, an editorial series. Mm-hmm. Mental health issues have always had – they've always come with a stigma. For folks seeking help, there's that stigma that, well, everyone is going to know. They're going to look at me differently. For folks that are seeking mental health help, other people look at them in a different way if they know. Mm-hmm. And over the last several years, I know there have been strides by any number of organizations to try and alleviate those concerns and that stigma. And, of course, that's kind of what you're trying to do with this series and by bringing Frank King here to speak and talk about it a little bit. My dad, who knows much more about mental health than I ever would claim to or even begin to know, would say that you can solve a lot in the context of a good joke. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where Frank King is coming from. He's referred to as the mental health comedian. And so do you think that approaching it from a different standpoint as opposed to the really heavy, serious mental health public service announcements, it's just like anything else in life. Everybody goes through ups and downs, some people more than others. It just is the way it is, and to ask for help is okay.
Oh, I think so. And I think there are two things that you talked about that I'd like to touch base on. One, and I'm actually going to write a column about this, so you're getting a sneak preview, but the first time
exclusively on KMTS.
No, exactly. The first time I've been to counseling three times, and the first time was court ordered. I was a teenager. I'd been in trouble with the law off and on, and they sent me part of my last one was to go to counseling, and it probably had a very profound impact on my life. Like that, just as a teenager, to be able to chat with somebody about those things. And then again in college, I was, on my own, a big transitionary thing. And, did that for a while, there were some intense sessions there as I kind of coped with some things from my childhood. And then again, after I had a child. And so I think if you met my family, most people would say I'm the most normal person in my family. But I'm also the person who's been to the counseling the most. And so I know, but going back to the stigma side of it, I recently decided I was going to go back to counseling again. In the Valley, it's not easy, and that's one of the things I want to address as we go through this process. So my business offers some free counseling sessions because I care about mental health, but it's through a different insurance provider than we actually have. So then you have to cross-reference it. So you try to find that, and you cross-reference if you're trying to be cost efficient. Which, my last job, they like to call me cheap. I like to say I'm pragmatic on expenses.
It's your job. You're the boss.
That's right. But the thing that came up is I finally reached out to a counselor, and the counselor didn't call me back. And I called again. I didn't get a call back, and I called again. And that call, as much as I believe in counseling, it's still hard. I'm still, asking for help is not an easy thing to do. And so finally I got in touch with the counselor and I was told that I'd be getting an email scheduling a time the next day. I didn't get it for a week. And when that person called me again, I'm like, you've already broke my trust. Like I reached out for help and I'm not in a bad spot. There's some things I want to address. Like I know some, I want to be a good father. I want to be a good, publisher. I want to be a good husband. Like there are some stresses in my life that I could use some help with. And so I was talking to some other people as I've gone through this process, and it's not uncommon that these things happen where people reach for help and they don't know where to go. Now, I believe Aspen Strong is a group that is really trying to deal with that. And I can't, that came up to me when I was talking to someone like, did you try Aspen Strong? I'm like, I did not. I didn't know about it. And so part of it is, do we all really know the resources we have available to us when we go through that? And so I said, so on one hand, I want to encourage people to reach out for help, but I also have a challenge for the establishments around here. And again, when I was talking to someone about this, they had a similar experience. And I, you know, like I said, I stopped the search at that point. I'm going to get back into it, but because I still think I need to talk to someone. But it's pretty, like I said, it's pretty intense to reach out to somebody. And I think, and I get we're all busy, but I kind of hope in that field that I'm hoping mine was the minority, not the majority. But I think it happens more often than we think.
Yeah, customer service is something you need to be concerned about no matter what you do for a living, whether you're your own boss or whether you work for somebody else. You always have a customer,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Again, you can, if you're interested in mental health issues and if you enjoy learning things and laughing, attend the keynote speech by Frank King next Tuesday night, the 17th, at Morgridge Commons upstairs in the Glenwood Library. So Frank will start talking around 7. There will be a panel discussion from some mental health, I'd call them experts, practitioners maybe would be more appropriate.
So we have, Jackie, I'm going to say her last name wrong. Scraggro from Mind Springs Health, and she's a local, and she's been talking about mental health specifically. We have Kevin Patterson, who is the CEO of Connect for Health Colorado, and we'll be probably addressing bigger issues with that. And we also have Carson DeFries, and she's being brought in by Renew Senior Management. And so one of the things that's really cool about this is our two of our presenting sponsors, Renew, which is the new taking over Peregrine, as well as Connect for Health Colorado, don't have a direct tie to mental health per se. But when we were chatting with them, they were like, this is a big deal and we want to be part of the solution. And so they're up there as well. So we have two people have a background in mental health issues, but also just addressing the issue overall through a wide range, a spectrum from young age to older age to just how do you even get help in this process?
It's interesting you're talking about the insurance aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I think most insurances have some kind of policy for getting mental health help. But I think there's a lengthier process that you have to go through in order to get that paid for than there is just getting a wellness check at the doctor or something like that, which I find interesting. 'Cause as you say, it's tough enough to ask for help mm-hmm. with that kind of thing. And then you have to explain all this, you know, to the bureaucracy at the insurance company. In addition to, and that's even before you get to see the therapist or the counselor or whatever. And so I wonder if that's one of the things that, you know, might come into the conversation at some point in the future.
Well, I think so. And I think that's something that we want to address is how can we streamline this process? And one of the cool things about doing these micro events as well as the series is, you know, there is a mobilization in Garfield County. A lot of people are addressing this issue, and I think it's been great because you had some people who are working together and some people who weren't. And this process has started to bring those people who aren't working together more in the fold with each other. And I think you're going to see some of that, but on an individual level, on the insurance level. I mean, even like my reaching out to the insurance agency that's for free, like that was pretty painless to a degree comparatively to some other things, but still hard. Mm-hmm. It's still hard to tell someone I need help.
Sure.
So,
again, $15 per person if you would like to check this out Tuesday night at Morgridge Commons. And, again, tell me again about the schools. I know you're asking teachers.
So we're going to be sending information off to the school districts.
Okay.
Asking if teachers want to come or if they want to invite students to come. Like, really, it's more about the the message than it is anything else.
And getting people there. And again, the money that you'll make from those $15 admission price, that goes to
the local nonprofits.
Yep. Mental health related local nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you haven't decided exactly how that's going to be dispersed yet.
We have an idea of that. We have about three or four that we're looking at. Okay. We're going to take a look at the money. And if it's not a huge sum, we're probably just going to give it to one or two. If we get more, we'll divvy it up a little bit more.
Right. Would have a bigger impact if it was a smaller sum, if it went to one organization. I get you.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll be back and wrap things up in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon, we've been talking with Jerry Rahal, the publisher of the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. Again, next Tuesday night's keynote speaker is Frank King, the mental health comedian. Actually, lucky enough, we caught Frank on the phone. So, Frank, thanks for spending a little time with us today. I know you got a book coming out next month, so you're probably busy on the signing tour, you might say, promoting that. Of course, you've got a great resume before the book came out. You are a writer for The Tonight Show, is that right?
Yeah, for 20 years, starting when Jay was just the permanent guest host, and then when he took over the show, kept all of us sort of contractors, fax writers, they used to call us on. Took a bunch of us on for the real thing, for the real show.
So how does one get from writing comedy for something like the Tonight Show, a staple of American history for 60 years now, to doing comedy about mental health issues and suicide and that kind of thing?
Well, I've got a friend named Mike McDonald from Canada, another comedian, who says there are two kinds of comedians, diagnosed and undiagnosed. I come by it naturally. It's called generational depression and suicide. Depression and suicide run in my family. My grandmother died by suicide. My mother found her. My great aunt died by suicide. My mother and I found her. I was 4 years old. I will spare you the details. They are horrific. And I myself have come close enough to dying by suicide. April 2010, I can tell you what the barrel of my gun tastes like. Spoiler alert, didn't pull the trigger. I said that in a keynote the other day, and a friend of mine who never heard me say that out loud came up to me afterwards, and he goes, "Hey, man, how come you didn't pull the trigger?" I go, "Hey, man, could you try to sound a little less disappointed?" So that's how I started my comedy career at the Improv open mic night in San Diego. Year so in, my girlfriend, now my wife, went on the road. We did 2,629 nights in a row, nonstop, no home, just comedy club to comedy club. And I opened up for Seinfeld, Dennis Miller, Jeff Foxworthy, Ron White, Ellen DeGeneres, back when they were just comics. Then I jumped to radio. My old hometown of Raleigh, North Carolina, the number one rock and roll morning show, WRDU 106, the home of rock and roll. They called and said, "We've lost one of our morning DJs. Would you like to be, would you like to partner up?" And I said, "Sure." And I took a number one rock and roll morning show to number six in 18 months, one of my proudest accomplishments, and got fired, as you do, because you know this. The two kinds of people in radio, people who have been fired, people who are going to be fired, went on the road doing stand-up in the corporate circuit, the rubber chicken circuit, because it had always been very clean. And so for a long time, from like mid-90s to the recession, people paid me a tremendous amount of money, just to be HR friendly and funny. And then came the recession, and my speaking business dropped off 80%. My wife and I lost everything in Chapter 7 bankruptcy. And that's when I got the itch on the roof of my mouth. I could only scratch with the front side of my 38. And then fortunately, as I said, didn't pull the trigger. In my first TED Talk, called A Matter of Laugh or Death, I talk about why I didn't pull the trigger. What actually happened, and I didn't know it at the time, because I always wanted to, make a living and a difference, do comedy, but teach people something, and I figured I didn't have anything to teach. And then I read a book by a woman named Judy Carter called The Message of You, Turning Your Life into a Money-Making Speaking Career. About halfway through, I thought, I do have something to talk about, because what I discovered was, when I was preparing for the first TED Talk, nobody talks about depression and suicide out loud, even though in this country last year 47,000 people died by suicide, one every 11 minutes. And I discovered that just the mere mention of the words depression and suicide out loud starts the most amazing conversations with people, some of whom I have just met. And so that's really what I do. And when I write a book of my own, because the book we have coming out is I have two co-authors. When I write my own book, it's going to be called Start the Conversation, Life in the Exit Row. And because that's what people hire me to do. They go, we want you to come in. We want you to start the conversation, you know, give people permission to give voice to their experiences surrounding depression, thoughts of suicide. So that kind of brings you up to today. I'm getting ready, by the way, for my fifth TED Talk in Durango, Colorado.
No kidding.
It's called It's a Little Lighter Fare Than Most. It took me, I think I applied a dozen times, got turned down 11 times. It's called Mental Health and the Orgasm. Treat Your Depression Single-Handedly. And honest to God, that's what it's called. And I finally found a TEDx committee who thought that was the best thing they'd ever heard.
Interesting.
I'm doing that November 3rd in Durango.
November 3rd. So when do you think they'll have that on the YouTube channel? Will it go up right away, or do they normally, is there a delay?
Normally about 30-day delay. So okay. If I do it November 3rd, it should be up by middle of December. And my wife goes, that's going to be, I've got 10, 12, 15,000 views on my other four TEDx talks. She goes, this one, you know, with given the subject matter, you know, this is the one that's going to go viral because I've got, you know.
My question is, what kind of searches will it come up in that are, it's an unintended result? That's my question.
Yeah, well, if you put in the word masturbation, I have a feeling, because I talk about that in the, you know, I mean, that you can't tell me it wasn't a big day in your life when you discovered that little one-piece home entertainment center. Come on.
Okay. Moving right along here.
That's as far as I can go on the radio with a family show. It's like suicide and depression. Do you think people don't talk about that? They talk less about the word I just mentioned. That's why I guess I'm starting the conversation on that as well.
You talk a lot about conversation, and we actually discussed this a little bit earlier. Two things I think of when you're talking about bringing suicide and mental health issues into the conversation. A speaker that was here earlier in the year, whose name I can't remember, and I wish I could. One of the few people that was lucky enough to survive jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge.
Kevin Hines?
Yes, thank you. Yeah. And as he was walking toward the bridge, having decided to do this, he told himself, if one person acknowledged him, asked how he was doing, smiled at him, he would not go through with it.
Yeah.
And yet that didn't happen. As a matter of fact, someone, even seeing that he was distraught, asked him to take a picture for, you know, the vacation album. And
yeah.
That's kind of exactly what you're talking about here.
Yes, and here's why it makes a big difference, is that statistically speaking, 8 out of 10 people who are circling up towards suicide are ambivalent. 2 out of 10, they're going to do it. They're hell-bent on killing themselves. But 8 out of 10, like Kevin, want somebody to interrupt, want somebody to ask the question, want somebody to start the conversation so that they can say, you know, that what that guy was talking about, that's me. I mean, I have something called chronic suicidality or chronic suicidal ideation, which means for me and people like me, the option of suicide is always on the menu as a solution to problems large and small. When I say small, I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, my car broke down. I had 3 thoughts, unbidden. 1, get it fixed. 2, buy a new one. 3, I could just kill myself. Now, there may be somebody listening to the show right now, the radio right now, who has the very same thought process, because oftentimes when I keynote, people come up afterwards, and they've got that condition. And so the person listening now to the radio may be thinking, oh, my gosh, I thought I was just some kind of freak. I had no idea that had a name. I'm not alone. And when they realize they're not alone, the relief is palpable. That's the ROI for me, is a relief on their face, which, by the way, I realized not long ago that I can't kill myself because I'm sort of like George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life. These people who come up to me and they've just realized they're not alone. I mean, I've been shown, perhaps by the angel that kept me from pulling the trigger, what these people's lives would be like if I were not there to speak and let them know they're not alone. So I can't kill myself now because I would drag all those people with me. So that's kind of, so I'm stuck in the exit row, can't get the door open.
again, you can see Frank's. You know, because of the subject matter, I hesitate to call it a routine, and yet that is kind of what it is. You're doing stand-up next Tuesday night, right, Frank?
Yeah, you know, it's and it's not jokes, because people ask me, is there anything funny about depression and suicide? No. But there is humor in most subjects, dark or otherwise, and all the stories I tell, all the funny, comes from personal experiences. You know, I was talking to a meeting planner recently. She said, I want you to keynote. I said, great. What do you want me to cover? Now, she's well aware that I stuck her gun to my mouth, but she wasn't thinking before she said, I don't know, just a couple of bullet points. And then she realized what she just said. She's like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Go relax, Michelle. It happens all the time. So that's where the funny comes in. It's the personal experience, you know, other people's reaction to the subject. And it's much more digestible if you give the audience a little comic relief along the way. And by the way, I've also been busted for, you know, you're making fun of people with mental illness. Here's the deal with comedy. You can make fun of any group to which you belong. And I'm double qualified.
Unless you're Lisa Lampanelli, in which case you can make fun of anybody.
Anybody. But that's her choice. You know, and I love Lisa, but that is a radical choice. But I tell comics that I coach, look, if you're going to go that route, be the best at doing, you know, go after everybody.
Right. Leave no stone unturned, as it were.
No, so it's, you know, I just leaven the talk with enough humor to make them relax a bit, and people tend to remember. They don't remember what you say, but they remember how they felt about what you said. And so.
And again, if it brings a little awareness to suicide prevention and just mental health in general, then you think that's a good thing.
Yeah, because the book I'm writing with two co-authors, two women, Dr. Sally Spencer Thomas from Colorado. She's big time in the suicide prevention world. And Sarah Gare, who's a suicide prevention therapist, trains mostly first responders. They called me up and they said, would you make our book funny? And I said, wait a minute, you two women are writing a book on men's mental health? Don't you think you might need, oh, I don't know, a man? So you want to be a co-author? Absolutely. So I made it funny. And because 8 out of 10 people who die by suicide in this country at this point in time are men, specifically white men, age 45 to 54. You know, it's like guys, blue collar, good job, manufacturing. And the jobs really didn't go overseas. Only about 15% of jobs went overseas of manufacturing, you know. A lot of it is being done now by AI and robotics. And they lose a job, a union gig, good pay. And men tend to tie their, you know, their ego to their job. And they're cut loose at 50 and they're adrift. And men don't tend to reach out for help. You know, it's a pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of a thing. So we wrote a book. It's about men. There's 40 stories, men dealing with every issue you can imagine. How life was before it happened, how life was while it was happening, and then the last 500 words is, here's how I'm coping, in hopes that men would read the story, see how another guy was coping with the same problem, and, you know, take that advice.
One of the things I was earlier talking about is we were looking at who to bring out, and one of the things when I was looking at one of your TED Talks that really caught my attention, that I think, you know, you're talking about the suicidal thoughts all the time, but also looking at that long-range spectrum of thoughts that lead to there. And you had chatted about how you were depressed after being successful. Like you'd go do a gig and be on this high but be depressed afterwards. And that's something I found very relatable. And you talked about, you know, if I feel this way when life is good, how will I feel when things hit the rock bottom? And so I think that as we talk about these issues, I mean, that's one of those things that really caught me, because it doesn't matter, in my opinion, if – you think your life is going well, if you think your life is in a bad spot, mental health, like, you're always stuck with you, and regardless of that, and that underlying thing that people don't see. And so as we go through this process, along, you know, this longevity process, talking about mental health, that always really just caught my attention about, you know, people. We often look at people who we think are successful, but we don't know the demons that they have.
Yeah, it's as I said in the TED Talk, I've been most depressed and suicidal at some of the best times in my life. Now, that said, there are situations that can trigger the depression, but in terms of day in, day out, it's just like sort of like Muzak playing in the back, or DOS running in my head underneath everything else. It's and I'll give you two good examples. Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain died within a month of each other. They outwardly had everything in the world to live for. And my friends, my family would text me and Facebook message me and call me and ask me the same question. Why do they want to kill themselves? And my answer is, chances are, they did not want to kill themselves. I did not want to kill myself. I wanted simply to end the pain. And the metaphor I use for neuronormal people to try to get them to understand what it's like living with a mental illness, there was a Greek character named Sisyphus, and his penalty was to roll the rock up a hill every day, and you get it near the top, and the rock would roll back down to the bottom of the hill, and you have to start over the next day. When you have a mental illness, there's always a rock and always a hill. Some days the rock is small and the hill's not so steep. Some days the rock is a boulder and the hill is Kilimanjaro. But every day there's a rock and a hill, and I believe that Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain, and myself woke up one morning and simply couldn't move the rock. Just tired of living and wanted to end the pain. So that's how I try to express it to people who are neuronormal or neurotypical, who don't have a real grasp of context of that sort of, why would anybody want to kill themselves? Well, chances are they just want to end the pain. That's why oftentimes somebody who's been depressed and suicidal, this is a very dangerous sign, by the way, if all of a sudden they're happy for no apparent reason, there's a good chance that what's happened is they've chosen time, place, method. And they know the pain is finite, so they are, it's a relief. They know it's coming to an end very shortly, very quickly. So that's a very dangerous sign, something to look for when you're trying to spot thoughts of depression, thoughts of suicide.
I love that analogy just because the realization that you don't have to push the rock by yourself.
Yeah, and that's my job. I said that in the end of my last TED Talk. I said, look, my job is to make sure that when you make, you wake up in the morning, you can still move that rock.
Again, if you want to see that TED Talk that Jerry's talking about, again, it's Frank King, and the title is Matter of Laugh or Death. And again, look for the title in the bookstore. Did you say next month, Frank?
Yeah, next month it's called Guts, Grit, and the Grind, a men's mental mechanical manual. We designed it like an automobile owner's manual, for example.
Perfect.
I wrote, don't you wish the guy in your life had a check engine light? Goes to the mechanic, you plug in the analyzer, and the guy goes, Bob, no wonder you're depressed. You're 2 quarts low on serotonin.
Now, the only problem with that, though, is will guys read it? Like, do they ever read their instruction manuals?
Well, no, you skim around. It has an index, right? It's got an index, so you can look up what you specifically need help with, and you go to that section.
Well, if it's we designed it to fit on the back of a toilet tank, so you could do it in private, and nobody knows.
Okay. Perfect.
Well, you didn't say that. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
And we believe more women will buy it than men. Women who have a man in their life, father, brother, spouse, who has an issue, we believe women will buy it to find out how in the world they can help the man in their life.
Fair enough. Again, you can see Frank next Tuesday night. The evening actually starts at 5 o'clock. With heavy appetizers and coffee, water, lemonade, that kind of thing. Panel discussion at 6 o'clock, and then Frank will start the keynote speech at around 7 o'clock next Tuesday night. Morgridge Commons, that's above the library in downtown Glenwood. Again, for folks that don't have a special invitation, it's just $15 per person for the evening. And Frank, you kind of touched on this, but I want to be clear. You will be hanging around after you're done with your formal presentation. You'll ask questions and interact a little bit with the audience as well.
Oh, yeah, I tell them. Oftentimes we do a little general Q&A, and then I say, look, if you got a question you'd like to ask me, if you don't want to ask in front of everybody else, like, hey, I'm crazy, can you help me? I stick around until the last person has their question answered. Sometimes there's one person waiting. Sometimes there's a line of 6 to 8 because, it's a mystery to a lot of people.
Anything else you'd like to mention, Jerry, as we wrap things up?
No, I mean, it's been a very fascinating series to be part of. And as I said earlier, like, it's been great to do these stories and, looking at mental health issues. But the culminating thing that I'm really looking forward to is, having Frank there. And the entire goal of this series is, how do we start that conversation? How do we, when you have a loved one, I asked someone the other day, are you suicidal? And people don't get upset about that. Like, they appreciate that you care. It feels awkward to ask.
Awkward, like you wouldn't believe. I even have to practice that question.
Yeah.
But good on you for asking, because that's the it's, in my training, they say, look, if you can't ask that question, you find somebody who can.
Yep.
And again, Frank kind of touched on this, you know, the biggest red flag, if you will, if you're really concerned about someone. There were three things that you mentioned, Frank. You're much more articulate than I would be. But basically, if someone has a plan, that's when you really, really need to be concerned about getting them some help and interacting with them in a positive way.
Yeah, and ask them what the plan is. And if it's detailed, then you need to get them on the horn with Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Or if they're a young person, text the word CONNECT to 741-741, which is the text Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
And, you know, it's interesting. We started the conversation today, Jerry and I were talking about texting and social media, so that kind of brings the whole thing full circle now, doesn't it?
You weren't off topic at all.
Apparently not. I just didn't realize it at the time.
You need to meet young people where they are. You need to make it easy for them, and they're much more forthcoming in text than they are on the phone like us old people are.
Fair enough. Well, some of us are more forthcoming even when we're older. But anyway, that's story for another time. Again, thank you so much for the time. All the best. Safe travels, and we'll see you next Tuesday night.
See you next Tuesday night.
You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.